This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Finding good teachers and then keeping them is tough for many school districts, especially in systems with high needs. It's estimated that nearly half of new teachers leave teaching within the first 5 years, and that turnover takes a toll on schools and students.
So there's a constant search for better ways to train teachers so they'll be better prepared for the classroom and more likely to stay in teaching. One idea was described in a recent article in the Atlantic magazine, a teaching apprenticeship.
It pairs a beginner teacher with an experienced master teacher, and it's already happening in the Boston public schools and in some suburban systems. Cheerleaders of this apprenticeship approach say it does a much better job of preparing new teachers for the classroom, but it does have its limitations. To talk about all of this, we're joined here in the studio by Catherine Merseth. She's a senior lecturer at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and she's director of Harvard's Teacher Education Program. Catherine, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jesse Solomon. He's director and founder of the Boston Teacher Residency. Jesse, thanks to you, too.
Good afternoon.
And listeners, we want to know what you think the best way to prepare teachers is. Do you think the current models work, or do we need new ways like these apprenticeships to make sure that new teachers eventually become veteran teachers and don't become dropouts? And if you are a new teacher, we want to know if you feel supported and equipped in the classroom or if you don't. And if you've been teaching for years, tell us if there's something that you now wish someone had told you from the start. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Catherine Merseth, I feel like to talk about why there's a need for things like teacher residencies and teacher apprenticeships, we need to talk about first what's not working now. So what do you think it is about the traditional models of teacher training that need improving?
Well, I think much of the traditional teacher education has occurred within the ivory towers of higher education, whether it's an undergraduate teacher preparation program or a graduate teacher preparation program. Traditionally, that was the only route that you could go in order to become a teacher. And probably about 25 years ago, that cartel, which the higher education institutions held, was broken up, primarily initially by Teach for America, but now more frequently by teacher residencies, where there is the view, of which I actually agree, that the best place to learn about teaching is in real schools with real students and real teachers.
You use the word cartel, and I was going to note that when one of our producers had called you the other day to invite you on, she said you have very tough language. I mean, cartels, you talked about these schools are cash cows. You said it's sort of this dirty little secret. So you have very strong feelings about this being a flawed system. Is it that you sit in classrooms and read books, but then you're thrown into a classroom and you're really not sure how to do the practical teaching?
That's it, exactly. And I'm not suggesting that all you need to do is to be in a classroom. You obviously need to know why you teach, what the purposes of education are, why we have schools, what we expect them to do. But the emphasis, I believe, has been too much on the theory and not enough on the practice.
So explain more about how an apprenticeship program would work.
Well, I know my colleague Jesse will be able to tell you that as well, but the apprenticeship program that we are exploring is one in which we hope to put Harvard College seniors into classrooms in the spring, train them in the summer in a full-time summer program, and then in the fall put them into real schools in real classrooms like many of the residency programs. But our twist on it is trying to think about scale. Because one of the issues with residency programs is it's often one mentor teacher to one beginning teacher. And that simply won't do it at a large scale number. We need far more teachers than we have really outstanding mentor teachers. So we're exploring using the internet, using 360-degree cameras in classrooms, being really much more in front of the beginning teacher as they begin to teach.
When I hear you say we're going to pair a student with a teacher and put them in the classroom, this sounds to me like student teaching, which is already done. So how is this different?
Well, sometimes in student teaching, people are closely supervised with a mentor teacher who is there every minute of every day. And sometimes they're taking over, quote unquote, a classroom where they might be on their own for a week before the mentor teacher, because the mentor teacher often has her own classes or his own classes. So this contact with an expert, with someone with on-the-ground expertise, is often limited, and that's part of the problem that we need to correct.
Jesse Solomon, again, you run, you founded and you direct the Boston Teacher Residency Program. So the way Catherine just described it, is that how you describe your program? Tell us how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
I would describe it that way. You know, folks come and they spend a full year in the Boston Public Schools, and I think 4 days a week full-time in a classroom from, you know, the week before school starts till the last day, and all of our coursework and coaching is done in that context and around that year. A critical component are these folks in our program. We call them clinical teacher educators, and these are people who are really able to blend theory and practice. So if you go back to what Kay was saying at the beginning about this sort of split between sort of learning about teaching in a classroom in a university and then the sort of real practice of it in a school, what our clinical teacher educators try to do is to join those two things together so that you're teaching the theory and the practices, et cetera, either physically on the school site or at least in a way that's connected to what's in the school site, and then you're in the school with those folks coaching them the next day. So you might be saying, hey, we're going to have a class on elementary mathematics where we're thinking about the kinds of questions we ask of students. You could have a class about that, but then you're in the school with them the next day with kids coaching them in real time about the kinds of questions you're asking. So it's that kind of connection that feels really important.
Jesse, you're a former teacher. You taught math in middle and high schools for 10 years in Cambridge and Boston, including at a charter school. What did you feel was lacking or flawed in your own training, if anything?
Well, it's a little bit of what we've talked about, which is not really preparing for the reality of what you face when you get in a classroom. And when I started teaching high school math, the way I would describe it to people who weren't teachers was that I was teaching ninth grade and fifth grade at the same time. And, you know, my responsibility as an algebra teacher was every single kid in my class had to have access to, you know, full rigorous algebra class. But you also have students who've missed a lot of skills along the way. So at the same time you're trying to teach ninth grade algebra to everybody, you're doing it with kids who, you know, may have lacked some of the skills that they needed to pick up along the way. And then you're doing that five or six times a day with 25 or 30 kids.
So both their abilities and maybe their behavior at times was younger, even though you were with ninth graders?
Yeah, you know, behavior is always an issue. And if you talk to new teachers, that's probably the first thing they'll talk about. I think in many ways, that's a short-term issue. The real long-term issue is actually about engaging kids in incredibly rigorous material, right? Because the idea is not to just sort of keep them occupied. The idea is to have them thinking hard, and, you know, in my case, it was about mathematics, thinking hard about mathematics, puzzling over things, really struggling with things. And you actually find, as you grow as a teacher, that a lot of the things that you worry about in classroom management at the beginning of your career go away as you get much more focused on the rigor and engagement in the class.
So when you have people who've gone through your program, before they are assigned, before they get their real job, their sort of full-time paid job, they've had a significant time in a classroom before.
Right.
And do you feel like they have a less of a shock to the system when they finally get that job?
Yeah. I mean, so what we do is we say to them, your first year of teaching will probably be your hardest year, but we try to simulate a lot of that in their residency year so that they really know what they're in for. And the other part of the program, which I haven't talked about, is, you know, part of the idea is, and I think this is one of the things that universities really have it's just a challenge, is we only prepare people for Boston. So we prepare people in Boston for Boston. Part of that is getting to know the city, getting to know its history, getting to know its dynamics, getting to know the instruction that we use, the curriculum that's used, et cetera. So that your first year as a teacher, you're not learning all that stuff new. You're obviously learning your kids and you're working on your teaching, but you've learned some of what you need to know as a first-year teacher. And if you prepare in one place and then go teach somewhere totally different, the learning curve is just much steeper.
We're talking with Catherine Merseth and Jesse Solomon about new approaches to training teachers, including residency programs and apprenticeship programs that are different than traditional student teaching. You can call us at 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255, to tell us what you think works about teacher training, what doesn't work, and how it could be better. And I want to go to some calls because we have several people who are eager to weigh in. One of them is Caleb calling from Dracut. Hi, Caleb, and what do you think about all this?
Hi, how are you? I think it's wonderful to have these residency programs. They sound really innovative and I think a little bit different than what I went through. I graduated from UMass Boston in 2005, and I did a student teaching program. It was a great education program. I had two semesters where I observed classes, one at Boston Latin, one at Medford High School, and then I did my student teaching at Medford High. And the student teaching I did was absolutely imperative to getting into the classroom and seeing what it was like, seeing how to the kids reacted to me, and then learning a little bit from that.
Did you have a lot of oversight? Did you have a lot of oversight from a more experienced teacher during your student teaching experience?
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say. I think this residency programs, from what Jesse sounds like, there's definitely a lot more oversight. I had a little bit of oversight, and I could always ask questions. And being the outgoing person that I was and curious person that I was, I took it upon myself to ask those questions and say, how am I doing? What should I do? Did this go well? What do you think, to my mentor teacher? But because it was just a teacher that I had met and said, hey, would it be okay if I do a student teaching with you? It wasn't someone who was assigned that role and wasn't like someone who was brought in through the college that I was going through. So it was kind of, in a way, helpful in that respect. More helpful was just getting in the classroom itself.
Oh, I'm sure. Caleb, thank you for that call. I want to turn to Catherine Merseth, because, Catherine, one thing that both Caleb raised and Jesse raised is, again, the role that the master teacher plays. And one thing Jesse touched on is that in these apprenticeship programs, the master teacher works in the same school that the apprentice teacher does, so they know the parents, the students, the culture, the system, which sounds invaluable.
Yes, I think it's terribly important, particularly as Caleb has mentioned, the culture of the school can differ. And so he could be prepared at Medford High School and then go teach in a different school. And my issue is that who supports him in his first year of teaching? Because Medford High School could have been wonderful. He had access. He had friends, people that would visit his classroom. But then when he starts to teach, that very first year of real teaching, my worry is, who's there to support him then?
Well, in the apprenticeship program, could you apprentice in a school but then end up teaching in another school?
Yes.
So the same problem could exist, right? You could get a support network within one school and then find a completely different landscape somewhere else.
Yes, indeed. That's part of the problem that we're trying to solve, which is exactly that you apprentice in one program, you have a lot of support, you have a lot of time for reflection, but then you're on your own. And I can't think of any profession where we put people completely on their own to be responsible for 30 individuals' lives and well-being and learning, and there's no support system whatsoever.
We do actually, part of our deal is folks commit to Boston for 4 years. We also support them in Boston for those next 3 years. So a little bit to your question, even if you prepare at one school and teach at another school in Boston, we have folks that we call it our induction work, who continue to support those folks through coaching, seminars, additional coursework, those kinds of things. Because you're not done learning how to be a teacher just because you graduated a program, even the best program in the world. And so, you know, all new teachers are working on their practice. And so that's why we actually continue that support for the next 3 years.
I just love that about Jesse's program. And I think that is so important. And one of the downfalls of the higher education system, I always used to joke that, you know, we work intensively with these folks. We stand very proud about what we do and how we support them when they're with us. And then once they graduate, the only thing they hear from us is an alumni appeal.
Right. A call for some money. Exactly. We have another caller. This is Chris calling from Beverly. And Chris, I understand you teach at a private school?
I do. I teach at a private school in the North Shore for students with language-based learning disability. I'm beyond the beginner teacher stage of my career. I've completed a master's program and a mentoring program and have a professional license. But I'm in that kind of group that has that seven-year itch. I'm entering my eighth year. Well, I'm in my eighth year of teaching now, and I've kind of pushed through that beginner teacher stage and into the more experienced learning my craft stage. And I also think that that's another group that could probably appreciate a revitalization or another step of encouragement to continue in the field, because we are those experienced teachers, you know, of the future for new teachers. And we're another group that kind of seems to be left alone.
Chris, that is a great point, because certainly just because you've been teaching for 7-8 years doesn't mean you can go completely solo. Catherine, you're nodding vigorously to this.
Very, very much so. I think the support of teachers like you is critical to the future of our profession, and you have so much to give. I also would say that sometimes, you know, an experienced teacher of 7 years may not make a great mentor. And so there's work to be done to help folks like you translate what works so well for you in the classroom so that you can help beginning teachers. But absolutely, the idea that we more or less abandon you after 5 years is, I think it's ludicrous. I think it's nuts.
I want to bring in another caller who we had lost temporarily. And Lee, I'm so glad you called back. You're from Stowe, and you went from industry to teaching. So tell us about that transition.
Yes, I was in industry both as a software engineer and a software engineering manager. And for the last 10 years of my career, I went to teaching in a high school. And I had an interesting observation about what happens to a new employee at each of those situations.
How do they compare?
Well, when I hired someone to work for me, they came in the first couple of days and they learned where the bathroom was and how they got their paycheck. And then they were asked to start reading about the project they were working on, and after a couple of months, they started to be productive. And when I went from industry into teaching, I showed up the first day, and I had a full load of classes and students and parents and administrators and everything, and I was expected to start functioning at the expected level day one.
And Lee, what had your training or preparation been for teaching?
I had gone to a full master's in education program prior to that and been a student teacher. So I've gone through the standard procedure before that, but that's not nearly the same as starting the work.
From what you hear about this apprenticeship program that's being described, do you think that would have made you more prepared?
I think it's more prepared, but I think there needs to be a much more of a ramp going in. I think if the full load of a teacher is five courses a semester, they need to start off the first semester teaching two courses.
Ah.
There's some administrative problems in doing that, but they should start off at a level where they can come into the system, learn how things are done, learn how the textbooks are organized, learn how students and teachers and parents all work.
Very interesting.
And then ramp up into the full load maybe by their second semester.
Huh, very interesting suggestion. Lee, thank you so much. And Jesse and Catherine, I imagine you hear this kind of story all the time.
Well, we do. And I think, Lee, one of the things that we're putting into our program is that during the first year of teaching, the full first year of employment as a full-time teacher, we're only asking our students our interns to take on part-time positions. And you say, well, there's some administrative troubles with that. This is true. But there are also money issues because they still need to learn to earn a full salary.
Sure.
But we're trying to raise the money to do that because we believe so much in the ramp, as you've described it. And the time when they're not in classrooms in front of students is exactly the time when we want to be there working with them.
Yeah. But these last two comments just emphasize this really important point, which is the career path in teaching is flat. The job looks the same on the first day as it does 20 years later. Mm-hmm. And we would be hard-pressed to name another profession that looks like that. It doesn't make any sense. It's a sort of old, antiquated model. And I think if we're really going to continue to go out and attract great people and bring them into the profession and keep them, there has to be a level of differentiation and of sort of advancement as you move through teaching and take on different responsibilities that both of these comments, both from the first-year teacher and the seventh-year teacher, talked about.
Mm, that's a tough and somewhat discouraging observation. We have another caller who is a Boston Public School teacher. This is Brian calling from Framingham. And Brian, you've been teaching how long?
For about 12 years now.
And what are your thoughts as you listen to all of this?
One of the things that I was thinking about is I have a lot of intern teachers that come through my classroom, and it's always shocking to see how unprepared they are for the amount of work that they do that is not teaching. A lot of teachers come in and they say, oh, I just want, you know, I want to be a good teacher. But there's so much background stuff that has to happen now in terms of testing and just all the stuff that you have to do that takes up your planning time and classroom management. It's so much more than just teaching.
And when you say interns, are these people who may be in a master's degree program? This is their student teaching element?
Yes.
The interns
yes.
that come
either
to your classroom?
They come either one day a week or they come 3 to 4 days a week, something like that.
Sounds like they actually might create more work for you.
It does a little bit, yeah, but I think that it's important that they understand kind of what you learn in school, what the general idea is when you're going to be in a public school or whatnot. But then when you're actually doing the job, it's so much more. It's so much different
Absolutely.
Than what you learn when you go through a grad program.
Brian, thank you for that. And we only have about Kathy.
Yeah, I want to just mention, I think, Brian, you're onto something here. In America, we tend to define the role of teacher only when they're in front of a classroom teaching kids, actually in front of 30 kids or whatever. But in other countries like Japan, the definition of a role of a teacher is not only when that teacher is in front working with students, but it's all of the surround. It's writing curriculum. It's consulting with colleagues. It's watching your fellow teachers teach. And that somehow has been dropped or never was there in our conception of teaching. We always think of teaching as being in front of teachers. That's why many people say, what, there's a professional development day and your teacher's not going to be there? Well, absolutely, the teacher needs to have a professional development day. There are other aspects to the job that simply in our role in society here in America we don't give credence to.
Jesse and Catherine, we only have about a minute left, but I do want to mention one thing that Catherine brought up, which is 360-degree cameras in the classroom. I think it's a really fascinating and potentially invaluable idea because, of course, every time a teacher turns his back to the classroom, he misses what's going on. This camera not only shows you that, but every other angle. Jesse, does your program involve these cameras at all?
Yeah, we use, we use video, just we use some of the, we use two cameras, not the 360s, but we use video as a huge part. And the theory there, right, is that you can only get so much better without actually looking at your own practice. So up until then, other people are commenting on your practice, et cetera. And so everyone who goes through our program spends a lot of time taping themselves, looking at video, and thinking about sort of what did you learn from watching that piece of video and what would you do differently? How would you adjust your practice next time?
Interesting. You can watch yourself almost like professional athletes watching game tapes afterwards.
Exactly right.
What a great idea. It sounds incredibly useful. Catherine Merseth is a senior lecturer at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. She's also director of Harvard's Teacher Education Program. And Jesse Solomon is director and founder of Boston Teacher Residency. They've been talking to us about these residency programs, these apprenticeship programs that are in the works, a way to try to teach teachers to be better teachers, make them more prepared when they walk into classrooms so they're not so blindsided. Thanks to all our callers, and thanks to you, Catherine and Jesse, for talking with us about these issues.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, seduction, submission, and domination in the Huntington Theater's new play, Venus in Fur. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.